From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, it's about that time. So glad you allow Current Sports to be a part of your Thursday afternoon. We have a great show in store for you. We're going to talk MSU football, Ray Rice, the Tigers, and also bringing you Throwback Thursday. You don't want to miss any of that. And also, we continue our Current Sports Week of Fame as we invite, yes, Hall of Famer now, who will be inducted later on this evening into the Greater Area Lansing Sports Hall of Fame, Jerry West. Yes, Jerry West played on that famed back-to-back 60s MSU football team. He also went to Duran High School. Jerry will talk about this incredible moment and this incredible honor to be inducted into the 2014 Hall of Fame class. And we'll take your calls, folks, all of that and so much more. But as custom here on the show, here's Alex Sharg with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Thursday, July 31st. Michigan State head coach Mark D'Antonio took first place in an anonymous BTN.com survey of players on the question of which Big Ten coach they would want to play for, and part of the stipulation is that they couldn't pick their own. D'Antonio got 5 of the 14 votes, Ohio State's Urban Meyer got 4, Penn State's James Franklin got 2, and Michigan's Brady Hoke, Nebraska's Bo Pelini, and Pat Fitzgerald all got 1. MSU also took second place in the best Big Ten uniform vote, with 3 votes to Ohio State's 4, who took first. And Spartan Stadium came in second for toughest Big Ten venue, with 3 votes to Ohio Stadium's 6. Offensive lineman Tyler Higbee of Houston Kincaid High School tweeted his decision last night to play for MSU, writing, quote, "Blessed to say that I am officially committed to Michigan State, going to be a Spartan, hashtag go green, hashtag go white." Higbee visited East Lansing last week around the time receiver Felton Davis and cornerback Josh Butler committed to the Spartans. Higbee becomes MSU's 11th verbal commitment for the class of 2015. The 6'5", 285-pound Higbee recently cut down a top three of MSU, LSU, and Oklahoma State. Michigan head coach Brady Hoke, on the other hand, is slated to appear on ESPN's annual Car Wash, a gauntlet of interviews, photo opportunities with the network's television, web, and radio properties. This comes just one day after spending Monday and Tuesday at Big Ten Media Days. Hoke will be on the ESPN campus in Bristol for approximately 5 hours on Thursday for appearances on SportsCenter, ESPNU, College Football Live, ESPN.com, ESPNU Podcast, and College Game Day Radio, among others. 7 Big Ten coaches, including Michigan State's Mark D'Antonio and Penn State's James Franklin, participated in ESPN's Car Wash on Wednesday. Olympic ice dancing champions Merrill Davis and Charlie White will serve as the grand marshals for the NASCAR Pure Michigan 400 on August 17th at Michigan International Speedway. White and Davis, both Michigan natives and the first American ice dancing team to win Olympic gold, will give command of Start Your Engines to the drivers. They recently also were named the grand marshals for this year's America's Thanksgiving Parade in Detroit. The Detroit Tigers last night clawed back in Game 2 of a 3-game series against the Chicago White Sox, snapping a 7-1 win. Max Scherzer pitched 7 impressive innings, while Nick Castellanos had a 3-run homer to snap the Tigers' 4-game losing streak. The Tigers dropped the first game 11-4 as the series is now even at 1-1. Game 3 is tonight with Drew Smyly on the mound versus lefty John Danks. In other MLB news, All-Star Derek Jeter was recently honored by former President George W. Bush by paying a surprise visit during last night's game against the Texas Rangers. The president came out during a pregame ceremony in which former Rangers Michael Young and Ivan Pudge Rodriguez presented Jeter with a donation to his foundation, along with a custom-made cowboy boots with Jeter's name engraved. The president also gave Jeter a picture of the two from the night George W. Bush threw out the first pitch after the 9/11 attacks. Jamel Binion of Warren, Michigan is suing Shaquille O'Neal and also Trey Burke and rapper Waka Flocka Flame for their alleged mocking over social media. The trio took Binion's picture over social media and made their own adjacent pictures with similar facial interactions to Binion. Binion has a rare medical condition in which he has sparse hair growth, missing teeth, and facial deformities. Binion said an apology came from the trio of celebrities. And lastly, ESPN.com reports that Minnesota Timberwolves are only talking with the Cleveland Cavaliers that are engaging with Kevin Love trade scenarios. The Chicago Bulls and Golden State Warriors have reportedly moved on as they cannot offer up enough trade chips as the Cavaliers are offering number one pick Andrew Wiggins for Love. No deal can be made for 3 weeks with the Cavaliers as the clause is stated in Wiggins' recent contract. And those are your current Sports Quick Hit headliners for Thursday, July 31st. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. Again, our phone lines are open. They will be open this entire hour. If you want to call in and talk about anything that's in the on your mind in the sports world, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. How about that? You know, George Bush honoring Derek Jeter with custom-made cowboy boots. That's pretty hot. I want some myself. That'd be I'll add that to my my collection of sports memorabilia. That'd be pretty cool if I got some custom-made cowboy boots. I may ask for that for Christmas. Man, I'd say Derek Jeter, he's just on a world tour with his final year, and everybody's just honoring him. It kind of reminds me of that whole Mariano Rivera, you know, as he had during his final year. I mean, it was everywhere you went. I mean, no matter where Mariano Rivera pitched at, you know, teams were honoring what he meant to the game and what he meant to Yankee Nation. So how about that, though? A lot happening in the world of sports, and we are going to talk about it, folks. And also have to know that Ray Rice, you know, Ray Rice has been in the headlines pretty much for the past 2 weeks now, especially this week. We didn't get to this yesterday, but the firing of ESPN sports analyst Stephen A. Smith, who is the host, the co-host of ESPN's First Take, along with Skip Bayless and Kerry Champion. And Stephen A. made some comments that really sparked up a big uproar that extended beyond sports. I mean, anytime you turned on the TV, you know, whether it be national news from CNN to Inside Edition, I mean, everybody was talking about Stephen A.'s comments, in which he just used a poor outlook and choice of words when talking about this whole Ray Rice situation. You know, so now Stephen A. was actually released, suspended by ESPN. For a week. Stephen A., he will return to his Sirius XM radio show along with his position with ESPN's First Take next week, Wednesday. And Ray Rice came out today, and again, he apologized and issued a statement because, you know, he recognizes this whole fiasco that's really surrounding him in a situation right now. And, you know, he's asking for, you know, forgiveness from the fans, especially the Baltimore Ravens fans. He says, quote, "I made the biggest mistake of my life. That night, I replay over and over in my head. That's not me. My actions were inexcusable. That's something I have to live with the rest of my life. The pain I'm talking about living with is waking up every day and my daughter, who is 2 years old now, and I have a little girl who's very smart, very intelligent, and one day she's going to know the power of Google and have me explain that to her. What happened that night?" End quote. So it really interesting comments. Running back Ray Rice, he apologized to his wife and all women affected by domestic violence today when he took questions for the first time since his alleged altercation with then-fiancé in February. So interesting stuff. So, Alex, when you look at the situation with Ray Rice, man, first of all, you know, with Stephen A. Smith's comments, which were very, very interesting, because Stephen A., I mean, really, he kind of stuck his foot in his mouth with his comments, using a word that you should never use when talking about domestic violence, especially when it comes to women. He used the word provoke. I don't know 100%, because even in Stephen A.'s apology really didn't clarify what he was trying to say that day. But going back to his comments about the whole Ray Rice situation, he tried to, I guess, bring a different perspective to say that, you know, women shouldn't provoke certain instances that could lead to violence. Poor choice of words. I think ESPN made the right move in suspending him, because anytime you use the word provoke when talking about domestic violence when it comes to women, I mean, it's almost like when you use that word provoke, it's almost like if the woman, you know, if the female in the situation, you know, hammered at you in any way, shape or form, then it kind of gives you an open door to enact violence. It was a totally idiotic just ludicrous explanation that Stephen A. and point that Stephen A. tried to get across. And I really think that ESPN did make the right move with this, and it affected a lot of people. If you looked on the turn on the View, or like I said, Entertainment Tonight, Inside Edition. I mean, you had so many people weighing on this, and a lot of people were upset about it.
Yeah, in regards to what Stephen A. Smith said about the whole provoking thing, I was just watching television yesterday, and you see it in politics all the time where it's the man stooping down to the woman's level and the woman in politics not getting enough respect and whatnot. So at the same time, as much as the comments may have been a little bit amateur and a little bit uncohesive, not really pinpointing exactly what he's talking about, I mean, this kind of stuff happens all the time. And a lot of the time, it doesn't really get noticed or looked at as something that is a little bit severe of a comment.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it was certainly, I think, a irrational comment. I think it was a severe comment, to be honest with you. And looking at a guy like Stephen A. Smith, who's on the national stage, I mean, he's on a nationally syndicated TV show right on the worldwide leader, ESPN. They air it every single day. Being in that position, you have to really watch what you say. And how you say it, especially when talking about situations that extend beyond sports. And we love to do that here on the show. I mean, that's what Current Sports is all about. Our mantra is going beyond the X's and O's. We like to talk about hot button issues like this that really dive into the social atmosphere of just everyday life, and not just talking about you know their play on the field or on the court or so on and so forth. And I have to make sure, even being on the show, you and I, we have to make sure what we say, because it's easily, especially in today's society, which is so open, more so than ever, you have to really, really choose your words wisely and really, really make sure that your point is heard across the board very eloquently and clearly in order to reiterate the statement that you point that you're trying to make. And Stephen A. simply did not do that. And you can't do that on the national stage. I go back to Rob Parker. If you remember Rob Parker, who was also on ESPN's First Take, he made the comments about RG3, you know, the racist comments about RG3 and, you know, being a cornball brother. ESPN fired him. And, you know, going back to that situation, equating it to this situation, I think the Stephen A.'s comments, I mean, were worse than Rob Parker's, if you ask me. And, you know, Stephen A's not fired, though. He just gets suspended for a week.
Yeah, the ratings are too good for Stephen A. Smith to let go.
And so, that's the point right sense. There. So, all right, folks, again, our phone lines will be open this entire hour. If you want to call in and talk about anything that's on your noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our guest for today's show, and sticking with the theme of our walk of fame, if you will, or our week of fame is what we're dubbing it here at Current Sports. Of course, we had Jessica Beach Bograkis on the show 2 days ago. Yesterday, we had Jody Parker. And today, we welcome another individual who was a part of the 2014 Greater Area Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. Now, he was a graduate of Durand High School right here in Michigan. He was an outstanding performer in both football and wrestling. He won the 1963 MHSAA Class B Individual State Heavyweight Wrestling Championship. He then went on to attend MSU and played football on the rugged MSU teams of the mid-60s. How can you forget that, right? He is a 5'11", 218 pounds, and he was a key member of that legendary 1966 Spartan football team coached by the great Duffy. Come on, now, how can you forget that? It's my pleasure to welcome Jerry West to Current Sports. How you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. And I got to ask, you know, going, you know, rewinding the clock a little bit here, Jerry, you know, of course, I want to go back in time to that 10-10 tie versus Notre Dame back in 1966. I mean, what memories do you draw from that time playing?
Well, it's so long ago, it's hard to, you know, draw a lot of memories of, like, play-by-play action. I do remember a couple of plays there.
Right.
When we scored, and a couple other plays in the game. But I guess the most memorable thing is that it turned out to be a 10-10 tie. So we're still talking about that close to 50 years later.
Yes, we certainly are. I mean, how much do you wish that game would have had a victor in MSU's favor?
Yes. It's just, you know, like I said, we probably wouldn't be talking about it if it hadn't ended into a tie.
Well, I tell you what, it's certainly a game that means a lot to many folks in this area. You know, of course, you know, I mean, back-to-back championships during that era. I mean, it was unbelievable. I got to ask you, you know, Jerry, what was it like to play for Duffy?
Well, you know, Duffy was oh, what do I want to say? He was like a comedian coach. I mean, he always kept you loose, always had jokes, kept the team loose before games and so forth. And as far as the coaching part of it, he had such a great staff. We, you know, each individual unit worked with their unit. My offensive line coach, Gordy Sayre, was phenomenal. So I, you know, Ducky was up here, top of the, you know, head of the program. Myself, you know, as being an offensive lineman, you didn't have a whole lot of work, you know, interaction with him. But you know, it was he, like I said, he kept the team loose. He was the comedian of the team.
Do you have a favorite Duffy story that you can tell us, Jerry?
Oh yeah, he had there were a lot of them. I mean, he had the only downside of it was if you played there long enough, you heard the same jokes every year, you know.
So he just recycled them over and over, huh?
Yeah, he recycled them every early fall practice. You got the same joke. He had some great. I mean, he had some great one-liners.
Yeah.
As far as you know, some of his stuff, it was great. He was always he was an offensive. He was a lineman himself, and he always said he was small, but he was slow. So that's
right.
One of his things, you know. So yeah, he had tons of them.
Oh, that's great stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with the great Jerry West, again, a graduate of Durand High School right here in Michigan, who won a state championship in wrestling and also two national championships with the MSU football team. He will be inducted into the Greater Area Lansing Sports Hall of Fame tonight, with an incredible class who he's also joined with. Now, Jerry, you played with greats from the likes of Gene Washington, guys like Clinton Jones, George Webster, and, of course, the great Bubba Smith. I mean, what was that like? And, you know, just talk about how those guys are and how close is your relationship now?
Well, of course, Bubba's gone. And Gene's in Minneapolis. You know, I see these guys about every few years. We'll have, you know, they'll have a reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Every 5 years, definitely, for our national championship team. But I see Clinton quite a bit more because I have a daughter in California. So we usually visit when we're out there. We go out there usually once a year.
Right.
Well, you see him. These guys were, not only were they great football players, they just, every one of them was a great person. Every one of them.
And, yeah, certainly.
It was great for me just to have the opportunity to play with them.
You know, it was interesting. Last week, actually, we had a famed MSU sports writer, Tom Shanahan, on the show. And Tom is actually writing a book called The Ray of Light. When he's talking about Jimmy Ray, of course, you know, one of the few African-American quarterbacks here in MSU Spartan football history. And he's talking about, there's a section in the book that's so interesting. I actually got a chance to read an excerpt from it over the weekend. And he talks about how Duffy really opened the door when it comes to minorities in athletics at MSU, in the North in general. You know, can you talk a little bit about Duffy, you know, really breaking that boundary for guys like Gene Washington and Clinton Jones and so on and so forth?
Yes, he did. He opened the gates for the South, for the African-Americans, because they weren't, they couldn't enroll in the large universities down there at that time because of the segregation that we had in the South. So, Yeah, and then he brought a number of those people. He brought Bubba, and I don't know how many guys from Beaumont, Texas he brought up here.
Right.
Gene Washington from Texas, guy Jimmy Ray from South Carolina, guys from North Carolina and Virginia. So he brought them all in, all the African Americans, and he was he was very smart.
Yeah,
he brought them great football players in Michigan State at that time. And I think he led the charge and opened the doors for other schools.
You know, it's so unbelievable. You know, down at the Rose Bowl in January when MSU played Stanford, we were out there covering it, and I actually ran into Clinton Jones and Gene Washington, and they talked about that era. And, you know, like you said, Duffy opening the doors for minorities, in athletics here at MSU in the North. And it was really interesting because, you know, when I talked to Gene and Clinton, I asked them, you know, if they faced any adversity being up here, you know, one of the few blacks on the team. And it was really remarkable when Tom echoed these sentiments as well. You know, when they came up here, they really, you know, it was a family atmosphere. They really can't recall really any incidents of adversity being up here. And I got to ask you about that. I mean, being on that team was, it really speaks volumes because it was truly a family.
Yes, it was. I think Clinton Jones is the one that kind of started that term that while we weren't a team, we were more of a family.
Right.
And that's the way it was at that time. You know, I don't know how relations of other teams have been, but we all came in here, and I was from a small farming community, and a lot of the guys from Michigan were from small schools, a few from the Detroit area. But and then, of course, like I said, the African-Americans from the South, that was all a whole new experience for them. And we all came together. They put us all in the same dormitory, and I think everything kind of gelled from there. I mean, we lived together that first year, which was kind of uncommon at that time because the classes before us, they had put them in different dormitories. I guess they didn't want all these guys in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
But my freshman year, they put all, not just the football players, but they put all freshmen in the Wonders Hall that they could get in there. And everybody just kind of grew up together there. So, yeah, it was more of a family atmosphere than a team atmosphere. And I think that's what helped. My sophomore year, I think we were 4-6 or 4-5 or whatever. And then my junior and senior year, we went on to be, loss in the Rose Bowl and a tie with Notre Dame.
Right.
Other than that, we gelled and became a team and a force just because of the way everybody got along.
Certainly a story time in Spartan lore. Unbelievable stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with one of the newest members of the Greater Area Lansing Sports Hall of Fame, former MSU football great, Jerry West. Now, Jerry, you know, again, you played in the 60s and went on also to, you know, to have a great career. I got to ask you just about the game of football. I want to talk about the game of football here because we've had many discussions here, month in and month out on the show when it comes to football in the area of concussions. And the game is certainly changing in many regards due to a lot of people out there, and especially parents, when you talk about youth football, a lot of parents really concerned about the long-term health effects that the game of football could have on, you know, their little one. And it's really interesting because more and more is starting to come out about it. More and more research is being done, and we're starting to learn more about how concussions affect you down the line. And the NFL is certainly, you know, lended an ear to that and is trying to change the way as far as fines go for head-to-head contact, helmet-to-helmet contact. I mean, how is the game changing from when you played it to where it is now, and is it a good thing that it is?
I think there's much more knowledgeable about head injuries than they were when I played. I would think, and you know, I don't know this for a fact, but I would think the headgear, the helmets would be more technical and better technology in that for the headgear, I would think.
What kind of headgear did you guys wear? I mean, when you talk about the helmet that you put on back in the 60s, I mean, how padded was it? I mean, how light was it? Comparing it to today's helmet.
Well, they were made by Riddell, who still makes helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind that I wore was called a suspension helmet. So it had a webbing inside, and it held your head away from the outside of the shell of that helmet. And that webbing held your head away from that helmet. They also had some that were more padded, that the padding was kind of, had the padding than the shell of the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
I preferred the one with the web in it. Of course, everybody talked about the face mask. And of course, we had the big face mask and everything.
Right.
It's funny. it's hard to tell, you know, how things have changed. I think one thing has changed that they've, like you said, the NFL has taken more of a policy to let's err on the side of caution. And back in the day, you came out and guys were groggy and had a little, got their bell rung a little bit, they pop a little smelling salt, put it under their nose, and boom, there you go, you're back in, you know. But I think they're getting smarter now, obviously.
Did you ever experience that, Jerry, where, you know, you might have had a big hit, came out, and you know, had to ask a few questions and, you know, had some smelling salt and went back in there?
This is my patent answer for that. You know, I never remember getting knocked out.
Right, right. Yeah, that would be kind of silly, right?
But anyway, no, I don't. I don't really remember. I don't think I ever came out with a head with a head problem. I mean, I can remember you'd had a hit and you kind of blink your eyes, maybe see stars for a second, but get up and go back to huddle. But no, we did see, you know, back in those times, guys would get knocked out and they'd have to help them off the field. And just like today, I think there's more, I'm going to say, in as far as running backs, receivers, and defensive backs, if you're watching college football and pro football today, you're going to see a more spectacular hit than you did 40, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody wants to see that. You know?
Right.
And those kids are playing, I'm going to show them what I can do type of thing. It wasn't so much publicized then. You didn't have all the ESPN replays and all that back 50
right.
years ago. So, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, there were some great hits, but it wasn't people actually looking to put a great hit on somebody. They were just looking to tackle them back then.
Yeah, that definitely is a very, very good point. All right, Jerry, well, tonight is your night, if you will. You will be inducted into the Greater Area Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. Certainly a remarkable accomplishment for an unbelievable career for you. First off, I always love asking this question. We've asked our you know, two of the inductees, again, Jessica Beachbowl-Gracus and Jody Parker, who've been on the show the past 2 days. I love asking this question. How in the world did you get the call about your induction, and what went through your head initially, Jerry?
I wonder what was going on.
Know, right.
I got a call from Bob Everett and said that I had been nominated and accepted in the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. And, you know, you asked me if you want to accept that, and I say, like, heck yes, I'm proud and pleased to be accepted in the Sports Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's great stuff.
It was quite surprising, yeah.
Without a doubt. Jerry, do you have a speech prepared? And what can people expect from your speech tonight?
Short.
Really short, huh?
Sure. A lot of thank yous and make it concise and short. People who know me know I'm not going to talk for a whole lot of time.
Oh, that's great stuff. And, you know, it really speaks volumes. You know, when I was, you know, talking with you and talking with, again, the two inductees, and Jessica and also Jody, who have been on the show the past 2 days, you know, it's really remarkable when you just kind of sit back and think about all of the athletes who have come through the area of Mid-Michigan in the greater Lansing area. And, you know, I remember when Bob was on the show last year, and I got a chance to go down to the Lansing Sports Hall of Fame and walk the halls with Bob as he recounted all the jerseys and memorabilia throughout each and every hall. And I was just sitting there, my jaw was on the ground about how many players over the years, how many greats there actually were. I just want you to really just briefly touch on just, you know, sports from the around the area of Mid-Michigan and Greater Lansing, and how good just exactly they are.
Oh, yes. I mean, obviously there's, you know, the big names such as Smoltz and Magic and those, but you go back and there's Kevin Jackson, the wrestler, and there's all kinds of great athletes that have come out of here. It's just amazing. Just amazing. And I haven't been down there to see the display myself, so I'm going to go a little early today and check it out.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. I'm sure. Will you be donating any memorabilia that you have caved away in the garage somewhere?
Well, you know, Bob hasn't asked me that, but I do have things around here I can donate.
I'm sure he'll ask. I'm sure Bob. That's probably gonna be the next question tonight from Bob. I'm sure. Oh, that's great stuff. All right, well, there you have it. Durant High School graduate. Again, he won a state championship in wrestling and also two, yes, not one, but two national championships with the MSU football team in 1965 and 66. Jerry West from all of us here at WKAR's Current Sports, congratulations and thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Al. I appreciate it.
No problem, Jerry. All right, well, let's hit the break. We have a ton to talk about, ton to get to, folks. Again, our phone lines will be open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. When we come back, we'll talk about the upcoming year for MSU football. Don't touch that dial. We'll return in just a sec.
Start spreading the news.
Welcome back to Current Sports, ladies and gents. I am your host, Al Martin, now joined by Alex Sharg. And Alex and I will actually be taking a trip down to the Greater Area Lansing Sports Hall of Fame ceremony tonight. Definitely looking forward to it, Alex. I mean, Alex, you know, just really quickly, what are you looking forward to the most tonight, man?
Man, I'm probably looking most forward to the actual inductees talking about their greatest experience as an athlete. I mean, you would know, Al, growing up and playing basketball and things like that. You have so many different stories, from injuries to game winners to times where you were the hero, and even times
I've had
where
a lot of those
you were one of those six men on the bench and doing your thing there. So I'm excited to hear about some of the greatest memories that they have to share.
Yeah, truly. I'm definitely always look forward to the speeches. I mean, you know, there's nothing like a Hall of Fame speech. It really, you know, it just kind of puts in perspective, you know, just it goes beyond just their athletic careers and goes into a realm of what they learned throughout their careers, you know, times where they were down and how they picked themselves back up. I mean, just triumphant stories. I'm definitely looking forward to that. Again, that ceremony will take place tonight. Tonight, Current Sports will be there, and you can catch highlights of that on next week's Current Sports TV show. Again, each and every Thursday night at 10 p.m., Current Sports TV airs. And hey, it's Thursday today. That's right. Tonight at 10 p.m., you can catch the latest episode of Current Sports TV as I sit down with Lansing State Journal prep sports writer, and also he covers the MSU men's and women's soccer team as well as Lansing United, Scott Yoshanis. If you want to check out that episode, again, that's tonight at WKAR-TV. Tune in. DVR it if that's past your bedtime or if you happen to be doing something else around that time. Going to be a fantastic episode. You also get to see highlights from the One Goal, One Passion, Mateen Cleaves basketball camp, as well as the whole swap campaign. Yes, that youth football camp being put on by former MSU fullback for the 1988 Rose Bowl champion team, James Moore. So you don't want to miss that. All of that and so much more again tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Okay, Alex, well, let's dive into our discussion portion of the show. Again, call in right now if you want to talk about anything that's on your mind. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Some interesting comments from Mark D'Antonio, Alex, out in Chicago. Comments that if you are a Spartan fan, you got to feel pretty good about. You got to feel pretty good about D'Antonio making these statements if you're a Spartan fan, because it shows that he is ready to take this team and feels as though this team, this upcoming year, is ready to take that next leap into being among the elite. It's really interesting because a reporter asked D'Antonio. Now, you know, as you just talked about in our quick headliners at the beginning of the hour, D'Antonio had went through the ESPN car wash yesterday. Brady Hoke will be going through that today. But, you know, a reporter actually asked Mark D'Antonio, and I don't know if this was an ESPN reporter or not, but he asked Mark D'Antonio, quote, "Do you ever think about what if the playoff would have been last year and not this year?" D'Antonio responded with, quote, "Do I think about that? Yeah, I've thought about that." And the reporter follows up with, "What was your thought?" D'Antonio says this, quote, "I thought we would have been national champions, to be perfectly honest with you. I think we would have had a shot to do that because I thought at the end of the season we were playing great football and we were believing in ourselves. We were there at the beginning of the at the end of the season, but we were playing our best football in November and then into the Big Ten Championship game and then the Rose Bowl. We were like, this is taking off. That wasn't necessarily the case for some other teams," end quote. I loved it. I loved it because, you know, it shows for one, Alex, for me, again, it shows confidence, and you want the head coach of your team to show unwavering faith. And, you know, he has a great, great point with this whole thing. When you look at the numbers, MSU, what, they finished fourth at the ending polls. MSU finished fourth, meaning if the playoff was enacted last year, they would have had a shot at the national championship, a legit shot. Now, I'm not saying they would have won the whole thing, but it's fair to assume that D'Antonio's team would have been selected to that four-team 2013 playoff with the Spartans, again, ranked fourth after beating Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. Now, to go on to win that national championship, again, they would have to, you know, defeat some combination of eventual BCS champion Florida State,
SEC champion Auburn, and likely the 11-1 Alabama team would have been quite the daunting task. But hey, they would have been in that mix and definitely deserved a shot.
Yeah, and I see why you like that, and I understand from a Spartans fan point of view, it looks good because it shows that D'Antonio wants that national championship. But I'm going to take the other side of it, Al, and it kind of rubbed me a little bit of the wrong way because we talked about on Barbershop Wednesday and even a little bit before then about the top five Tuesday, coulda, woulda, shoulda. And I agree that because they beat Stanford, they would have been to the national championship game. But to go on to say that we would have been national champions, and D'Antonio went in here talking at Media Day that, you know, the Spartans don't want that headhunter. It's a very cautious spot to be in, and once you win, you have a little bit of a spotlight on you. And that is a very confident, hopeful standpoint that they would have won the national championship. That's why it rubbed me slightly the wrong way, in that saying they automatically would have been BCS champions and that we were the best team, and That puts a spotlight on you more than just being a headhunter.
Well, looking at his comments, though, I want to, if you look at what he said, let's go back to the quote. Quote, I thought we would have been national champions, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, talking about that specific quote right there, just to start off, as a coach, don't you expect your team to win? I mean, that's just a natural thing. You expect, you're not supposed to go and, you play, as Herman Edwards would say, you play to win the game. He, of course, as a head coach, you expect your team to go on and you have high expectations for them, especially looking at how MSU finished in that top four division. So, you know, he has to say that, I think. And then when you look at the comment after that, though, I mean, he wasn't gun-ho, like, even though he did say that, I thought we would have been national championships, that's a cliche head coach answer, I think. And then he goes on to say, I think we would have had a shot to do that. Saying not he's not totally gun-ho, because he's saying, when saying, I think we would have had a shot to do that, I mean, that's not totally demising the other three teams who finished ahead of him. He's just saying that, hey, if that playoff would have been enacted last year, we would have been in that position to possibly be hoisting that trophy.
Yeah, I see that. But the bigger concern of mine is that now it kind of puts you in a headhunter spotlight. And as much as you're not really putting the three other teams down, and as much as a head coach, you should be confident in your team to win the game, it's still coming off the media day. That's still a little bit more putting you more in the spotlight.
Don't you think it's about time MSU is in the spotlight, though? Because in any successful program, you have to have that moment. You have to have that year where all eyes are on you. And it's how you respond in that year that separates you from being good and great and making that leap into one of the elite in the nation. If D'Antonio and the Michigan State Spartan football team are going to be considered and taken seriously as a championship contender, you kind of have to bring on that spotlight and take it on full head, because if you don't, you're going to be just like the rest of the teams in the nation.
That's a good point, but at the same time, he has to have a lot of confidence going into this year that, regardless of the spotlight, the head coach is coming out and saying it too.
And that's why I love D'Antonio. And that's why I love D'Antonio, because Mark D'Antonio does not shy away from anything. He takes on challenges head on. He has this. D'Antonio has kind of like a quiet confidence that, you know, he'll give you the cliche answers, but every once in a while, man, he knows that, you know, he's very, very confident in his team's ability. He's very, very confident in his coaching staff. And every once in a while, D'Antonio will make a bold statement that it kind of puts in perspective where he wants this team to be in the future. And right now, he's showing with that comment that he wants this team to be among the elite, and he wants to prove all the doubters that say, okay, MSU won a Rose Bowl, hey, that year might have been a fluke, can they do it again? He wants to prove all the doubters wrong this season, and that's going to be fueling this team.
Yeah,
definitely.
No, I agree.
So, all right. And also, really quickly, I mean, you're a big rivals guy, Alex. And, you know, MSU, as you talked about in our Quick Hit Headliners, they got a pretty big recruit here in Tyler Higbee. Now, Tyler, he's an offensive lineman from Houston Kincaid High School. He tweeted his decision to play for MSU, writing, quote, blessed to say I am officially committed to Michigan State, going to be a Spartan. Hashtag go green. Hashtag go white. Now, he visited East Lansing last week around the time receiver Felton Davis of Highland Springs, Virginia, and cornerback Josh Butler from Texas committed to the Spartans. Higbee becomes the 11th verbal commitment for the class of 2015. It's really, really interesting because, you know, he chose MSU out of his top three of LSU, Oklahoma State, and MSU. This is a big grab. And I think, you know, with this recruiting class, which is really starting to come together for the class of 2015, it's really impressive, Alex, because you're starting to see not just guys from Ohio and just around, you know, this area. You're starting to see a reach from Virginia to Texas. I mean, it's really, really telling about how success breeds attention, not only from national writers and in the media, but also from kids who are looking to make a decision to play college football.
Yeah, definitely great seeing more of a national scope that they're leaning toward. But Tyler Higbee, watched a little bit of his film. This guy's got tons of upper body strength, pretty good with the feet. He's 6'5", 285, so obviously a pretty big frame for a guy who's going into his senior year, probably still a little bit more to add. Where do I see this guy? I mean, the time he gets here, he's got a lot of upper body. I'm not sure about his speed. I see him more personally as a guard, but I know he played tackle in high school, so I can see why with his current frame right now it makes sense. But I haven't seen, looking at his film, a lot of quick defensive ends on him. So
right.
You know, I'm curious to see what happens when he faces more of those type of players. But obviously a great get, especially a team where when you talk about offensive linemen, other than maybe Tony Mandarich, hasn't really been a focal point. So, you know, great to see an offensive lineman from out of state. Curious to see where he's going to play in terms of where on the line.
You know, Alex, I have a recruiting question for you. And I've always wondered this, too. I've been dying to ask you this, and it just kind of popped in my head just now when you're talking about film. Because, you know, when you talk about film and you talk about a tape, of course, when you look at a tape from a high school football prospect, it's going to be all of their best plays. It's going to kind of show their speed and agility and so on and so forth. But how much stock can you put into a recruiting tape, seeing as though, I mean, this is high school competition. You know, it's not like he's going to, you know, it's not like you're seeing film of him playing, you know, guys who, you know, fellow players who are already in college. How much can you take away from film? Because I feel like you got to take it with a big bag of salt.
That's a good question. And actually, one example I have, and I'm not the total expert recruiting buff. I'm not, you know,
right.
Compared
you just
to some,
follow it very closely.
I follow
yeah.
closely. And the best example is when I was growing up, University of Michigan offered a running back named Sam McGuffey. Now, Sam McGuffey, he played in Texas. He came from a pretty big school and had probably one of the best high school tapes that I've ever seen as a high school running back. Mm-hmm. Got him a high rating. He had tons of stats. And when he came to college, and before I actually get into what he did at college, the reason his high school recruiting tape was so highly touted and respected was he was hurdling over players. Hurdling.
Yeah.
In open field, he'd be running out on the side, and he'd literally full-body hurdle over a lineman.
Wow, looks like Le'Veon Bell in high school.
More. I mean, full-body hurdle. Not
wow.
just from a side, full, you know.
Like that guy standing straight up. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and he'd stomp over the helmet. So, looking at that, I mean, people were saying, oh, this guy's a freak. His vertical's 45, 50. This guy's going to be the next great running back. He comes to Michigan, he plays in the Big Ten Conference, he plays as a true freshman, and he does nothing. He later transfers to a small school and later does nothing. So how much stock does a recruiting tape have? A whole lot. And you see a lot of guys getting offers while they may not be going to the best
But
camps.
How did he pan out? This right. freak, how did he pan out?
He didn't pan out.
He didn't pan out at all.
You might have these guys in high school, and we talked about it at the barbershop. I mentioned this too, that there might be a guy that's a really good player but doesn't get put in front of the best talent and doesn't get as many looks. You might have a great recruiting tape, but you never play in the Nike Pro-Ams or the Elite 11s and some of the great national football camps. And you might still get some good offers, but you can't really know how good a recruit's going to be until you put them in front of the best competition
exactly.
at these camps. So,
right, and that's my point because, you know, when you look at these recruits, again, you look at the tape, you look at their stats in high school, it's all fine and dandy, and this can be equated to any sport, but specifically football because, you know, football is all about, at the end of the day, I mean, you definitely got to have strength, you got to have agility, you got to be athletic, and sometimes, you know, looking at these high school games, sometimes, you know, not everybody in high school is strong and athletic and so on and so forth. So you really, really, really have to be cautious and really, again, take it with a grain of salt when you watch these recruiting tapes, because you don't know how these recruits are going to be once they get to the next level of a football where pretty much everybody is hitting the weight room. Pretty much everybody is big. Pretty much everybody is fast. And, you know, it's really, really always interesting to look at it from that angle. Now, again, if you can look at an area like Texas, again, where Texas, I mean, Texas – in Texas, football is worshipped. I mean, football is on another level, probably like a level unseen in high school football across the nation. And, you know, when you look at, you know, how they breed football players in Texas, it's totally different from how it's done in Michigan or Illinois or, you know, North Carolina. It's totally, totally different. And the competition, frankly, is probably better. And so I think you can, if a guy is dominating at the high school level in a state like that, where the competition is known to be greater across the board in the nation, then hey, then I think you can put more stock into it. It all depends on the area and it depends on the competition, I think.
No, absolutely. And along with that, I mean, if the competition, and we've seen this with the state of Ohio too, because Ohio in the Midwest, and that's one of the great states. If you place better competition, sometimes you don't even have to go to some of these great camps. You'll get looks just because of the school you go to.
Right.
And if you have a decent highlight tape, you go to a great school in a big football state like Texas or Ohio, you're going to get D1 looks and even some of the top programs without even playing against the best competition. So you're right. I mean, absolutely. It really depends on, there's so many intangibles with the school, the state, you know, what competition he's playing in and how good the highlight tape is. There's tons of different intangibles. But at the end of the day, the stock really does improve with a good highlight tape. And although it's the best highlights, you can kind of tell just by looking at a guy and seeing him in his best highlights how good he really is. And that's what we're scouts look at too.
Yeah, and a story, you know, with our intern Andre Sims. I mean, that's how he kind of got noticed. I mean, he put together a highlight tape and shipped it across the nation. Andre Sims, of course, plays running back, or receiver, I should say, for the MSU football team now. And, you know, he just put together a highlight tape. Really no scouts came out to games, and he shipped out this highlight tape and caught the eye of many, of course, including the Michigan State football team. Okay, guys, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you. Again, if you want to weigh in on anything we talk about here on the show, you know that number, 517-355-9527. We'll be right back. Sunshine, blue skies. Please go away. Welcome back to Current Sports on this Thursday. Yes, Throwback Thursday. Alex is serenading our ears with many, many throwback joints. Thanks a lot, Alex, for that. Well, again, it's Throwback Thursday, and each and every Thursday here on Current Sports, we like to take a look back into sports history, you know? As my grandfather would always say, know your history, youngin'. And, you know, this is really, really a great one of my favorite days of the week, because you get to look back and, you know, look at moments that meant a lot in sports history. So, here we go. Throwback Thursday. Nope, we don't. Do we have it? Okay. All right, well, we're looking for it, because I think this will be our premiere for Throwback Thursday music, and Alex is going to bring it up a sec. But, again, there's so much, and I remember when Matt used to do this segment, I feel as though just about every single Thursday in sports history, Alex, we used to look at least one moment from Nolan Ryan. So I don't think Nolan has graced today's Throwback Thursday, but we'll certainly see. So here we go.
That the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
Yes, folks, it's Throwback Thursday time. Let's take a look at what happened on this Thursday in sports history, July 31st. Well, Alex, I'm going to go 1932 on you. Enzo Ferrari retired from racing in 1950. He launched a series of cars under his name. Enzo Ferrari, of course, a famed name when it comes to racing. So there you have that. That's 1932 and 1961. The first tie in an All-Star game, Major League, first tie in an All-Star game, Major League Baseball history was recorded when it was stopped in the ninth inning due to rain at Boston's Fenway Park. So again, that took place in 1961. In 1981, the seven-week baseball players' strike came to an end when players and owners agreed on the issue of free agent compensation. How can you forget that? You know, there's been many strikes in sports history. In 1981, that's one of the most notable when it took place in the MLB. And in 2001, this is a really, really sad day in sports history in 2001. If you remember, Corey Stringer, who played for the Minnesota Vikings, he collapsed during practice, and the 27-year-old died the next day of multiple organ failure due to a heat stroke. I will never forget that story. I was 11 years old, and I remember when that flashed across ESPN, and that really kind of opened the conversation, Alex, to, you know, how much is too much in practices, especially when you know, especially in football, when the heat is bogging down on you, and, you know, how much hydration do you need? Because I know some coaches, I remember when I was playing Pee Wee League in the summer, you know, back when I was about 8 years old playing Pee Wee football. I mean, my coach was ruthless. Ruthless, man. I mean, I remember it was a hot summer day, dude, and we're out there running laps around. Again, we're like 8 years old. I mean, it was a little too intense. This is near Cody High School on the west side of Detroit, and I played for the Cardinals, the Pee Wee Cardinals team. And, that was kind of the moment it really kind of turned me off of football and kind of made me go the basketball route. But, you know, it was just hot, man. And I remember, a few kids threw up, actually. It was so hot out there, man.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, the association of the Players Association had found out about this, the Pee Wee League in Detroit. And he was fired. He was fired 2 weeks later. Crazy stuff, man. So, yeah, that's sad news, though. Again, that happened in 2001. Corey Stringer dying the next day after collapsing in practice with the Minnesota Vikings. Multiple organ failure due to a heat stroke. So, that's a sad way to end our Throwback Thursday. Do you have any more throwback news, Alex?
One a little bit more local. In 2011, on this day, Plaxico Burress, former Spartan, tried to reboot his career with the New York Jets, agreeing to that one-year deal worth $3 million. I don't know if you remember that day where he signed with the Jets, but you know what? Still remember as a great Spartan. After that, it was a little wishy-washy for him.
It was. I mean, it started with the whole shooting himself in the leg. I mean, come on, man. Come on. I interviewed Plaxico. I remember he was here for is that Channel 6? He was here for a game. I forget what game it was, but Fred Heumann and I caught him on the sidelines, and we interviewed him and talked with him. He's a good guy. Really good guy. Just I don't know. His NFL career was just up and down, like a roller coaster. Anything else?
Yeah, a lot of trade deadline stuff. Another former Tiger, if you remember, Kyle Farnsworth from the Tigers, he was actually acquired by the Atlanta Braves, along with Rick Ankiel, who was a hot topic back in 2010 during the trade deadline. So that's another local thing I got there. And other than that, another trading day, Sebastian Telfair and Gerald Green, center field Ratliff, former Piston, was a part of that big Kevin Garnett Timberwolves Celtics trade.
Sebastian Telfair. I haven't heard that name in a long, long time. He was supposed to be the second coming of Allen Iverson.
That's right.
Coming out of New York's Coney Island.
Most importantly, Big Theo. Big Theo.
Yeah, Theo Ratliff, exactly.
Part of that big Kevin Garnett to the Boston trade. So.
That was huge. Yeah, that was kind of the start of that era, that Big Three era with KG and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce and so on and so forth. So, all right, well, there's Throwback Thursday on what happened on this Thursday in sports history. And talking about, just to wrap up today's show, Alex, talking about the trade deadline here. Again, this is the deadline I talked about. It's July 31st, the last day in July. Man, the summer has flown by. Last day in July. And the Tigers, you know, of course, I said that they needed to make a move. I said that they should possibly make a move for another big bet. They have about 2 hours left because the trade deadline ends at 4 p.m. today for the MLB. Do you think the Tigers are going to make a move? I think they are.
You do? I really think that they already made that move with Soria. I don't think they're going to make any more. I mean,
yeah.
The big news was that with the Cardinals and the A's bolstering the rotation, Justin Masterson getting traded, you know, a lot of big moves with big contenders. So, will the Tigers fire back with another big rotation move? I don't think so. I think they'll ride the boat with Soria. I think that was the big move. But
and what a tough outing for him. Joaquin is, oh my goodness, that's just a bad home opener for him, man. You know, it's interesting because, you know, we had a we always open our Facebook pages to talk about, you know, so for you guys to weigh in and talk about anything we talk about here on the show. Again, that's facebook.com/currentsports. And we actually had a listener who weighed in, Robert McCoy, Robert McCloy weighed in on it and says, quote, "I'm sure everyone is going to focus on the Soria meltdown in last night's game. I was there. Suarez charged with two errors, but made two. The one in the fourth inning cost two runs. Sanchez should have gone into the seventh with a 2-0 lead, and many few pitches that were caused by errors. And Romine had a silly incident being picked off. It was just bad."
Yeah,
so, again, that's from Robert McCloy, who decided to weigh in on Soria's meltdown in his first home opener with the Detroit Tigers. Again, folks, you can weigh in just like Robert just did by going to facebook.com/currentsports and tweeting me at AlMartinWKR. So you don't think the Tigers are going to make a move in the next 2 hours?
No. And a lot of people are saying, well, with the Iglesias down, Suarez and Romine, that might be a position. I'm not really feeling it. I think that those are role players. They're not really going for hitting. I think, if anything, if they make any move, they're going to go again at the relief bullpen. I mean,
you think so?
That's really the Achilles heel.
Yeah, and that's what they did, though. I mean, they got Soria to come in.
And that's why I think they're done. I don't think they're going to make any
I don't more. Think they're going to make a move. If they do make a move, it's not going to be for relief pitching anymore.
I mean, they're
it'll have to be a big bat,
They're running out of guys in the farm system to trade now, especially with Corey gone now. And
Right.
So,
yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll certainly see. The trade deadline is at 4 o'clock.
Well, the big move was the trade with Jonas Cespedes and John Lester, Boston, Oakland.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
That's interesting. You know, with Oakland, I didn't see that coming. I didn't. It kind of came out of nowhere for me. But I think, looking at Oakland, they're really they're the team that the Tigers really have to worry about. I think, you know, in that conference, and it's going to come down, I think, to Detroit and Oakland. I think, but I don't know, and I'm not. I always go back and forth with this because the Tigers sometimes look so good, then at times it's like, okay, they need to fix this or they're not going to win a World Series. I don't know if this roster can win a World Series, Alex, this year.
Yeah, well, look at the trade with Oakland. It's probably going to be their main competitor. I mean, they traded away one of their best hitters, and obviously they could still hit. I mean, that's a big piece that they're losing from hitting. They acquired a lot of different pitchers, John Lester now, so they're looking to bolster their starting pitching. They're starting pitching now, probably one of the tops in the majors. So
yeah.
I think that it will play to the Tigers' advantage considering their offensive team and their pitching isn't as good. And if Oakland's trading away their hitting, that might be a good sign from a pitching standpoint. When it comes to the bottom of the eighth, bottom of the ninth, you don't want Jonas at the plate.
Yeah,
so that might help.
But yeah, they're strengthening that starting pitching without a doubt. But do you think that this, with the way this roster is constructed right now, you think the Tigers are going to win a World Series?
I think they will, man. I really do. And I know you're hating the consistency isn't there.
Yep.
Let's see what happens in September, in October. So.
All right, we'll see. Only time will tell. Only time will tell. All right, folks. Well, less than 2 minutes left in the show. I want to remind you all that you can catch Current Sports TV. That's right. Tonight. DVR it. Make sure you flock to your TVs. Get your popcorn ready, folks. Current Sports TV from 10 to 10:30 on WKAR-TV. I'll be sitting down with Lansing State Journal prep sports writer who also covers the MSU men's and women's soccer team and also has done an outstanding job all year covering Lansing United. I'll be talking with Scott about the firing of now former Fulton High School football coach John Winkler. He also weighs in on whether or not he thinks high school sports are becoming too political. And hey, he even gives his thoughts on this whole Ray Rice situation. So we'll talk about that and so much more. It's going to be a great sit down. You also catch highlights from two notable camps around the area. My team Cleves is One Goal, One Passion Camp and James Moore's Swap Youth Football Camp. Again, tonight, 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. I'll see you tonight, folks. Well, we are out of time. Thanks so much to all of you who tuned in to today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with Al Martin on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic Thursday, and hey, be easy, people.